This is Fresh Air. The Today Show and The Tonight Show, two of the longest-running shows in TV history, were created by my guest, Pat Weaver. He also launched Your Show of Shows with Sid Caesar and Wide Wide World. He joined NBC TV in 1949 and was president of the network from 1953 to 56. His new memoir, The Best Seat in the House, is about the early days of radio and TV, but he occasionally digresses to discuss his now-famous daughter, Sigourney. Before joining NBC, Pat Weaver worked in advertising, and in those days, advertisers virtually produced the programs on radio and TV. In his years with the ad agency Young & Rubicam, Weaver wrote and produced for Fred Allen, Jack Benny, Burns & Allen, Phil Silvers, and Jackie Gleason. But he knew that the networks, not the sponsors, should be controlling the programs, so he insisted on changing the system when he joined NBC.
I wouldn't go to NBC until I got an agreement that I would run television. It would have nothing to do with NBC except accounting, getting money for things. But basically, I had my own controller, my own research department, my own program department, my own sales department, etc. And I wouldn't go until they kind of agreed to do that. And they knew that I would not come unless we could build a program service that we controlled and support it with advertising, like a magazine or a newspaper.
So here you are at NBC. You've decided that now the network will produce the programs, and you had to come up with some ideas of programs to produce. One of your early big successes, I mean, one of the biggest successes in the history of TV, really, was your Show of Shows with Sid Caesar. What was the concept behind the program?
Actually, I'd been trying, even at the agency, to build what I called an all-evening structure that would keep people at home on Saturday night instead of doing what they usually did, which is to go to a movie, which in those days, in big theaters at least, would have a stage show. So I had kind of worked out different things, and I went to Max Liebman because I'd gone up to Tamamint. It was a resort hotel in the Catskills where Max put on a real new show every week, a complete, not just a couple of stand-up, but a complete show, orchestra, dancers. It was not quite as big as a Broadway show, but very close.
So your concept was to take this nearly Broadway quality review that was at a resort hotel in the Catskills and to bring that to television.
Yeah, but much bigger. And also, we had, like, on that show, we had our main singers, Margaret Piazza and Robert Merrow, were both from the Met, the Metropolitan Opera House. We had the MCs would either be great names from the theater, or they would be people like two or three of the great violin players would come in and host the shows. This is part of the enriching side. We tried to make all shows more than just entertainment. They should have information in them. They should have exposure to the great cultural achievements of mankind, etc. And gradually, we hoped to move the audience to where they wanted to see the whole thing. And we did that with Producer Showcase. I mean, we had 30 million viewers to the entire ballet, The Sleeping Beauty with Margot Fonteyn.
How did Sid Caesar become a part of your Show of Shows after the Catskill concept?
Well, he'd worked for Max, and then he'd done some things in the war, and he had been on stage on Broadway by himself, in a review. But he was, Max's pal, and Max was responsible for his explosive greatness, which did happen on Show of Shows.
When you started in broadcasting, you were producing radio shows. Now here you were getting new TV shows on the air. Did you have a sense of what would work on television that was different from what had worked on radio?
No, not really. I believed, when I started in radio, 32, CBS Los Angeles, the Donnelly station there. We had a TV station on the roof, experimental, three sets in the Los Angeles area at that time. and they played old movies, uh-huh. You know, 1932, old movies were pretty old. But what I'm saying is that studying what would happen, we already knew that the cassette was coming, that all these things were coming that would enable us to make the medium have the kind of great world planetary coverage that we had in radio. Because in radio, I don't think you're old enough to remember, but we used to say, come in London, bang, here's Winston Churchill making a speech, come in Buenos Aires, and on they'd come. That was that instantaneous coverage that we knew it would take a long time to get with TV.
So you were sure that television had a future, but did you have a hard time convincing the stars of the time to come over to television?
Very, very hard. They were scared to death of it because they figured, particularly, you know, nightclubs were still very important, and the fear was that if they did their best stuff, they couldn't keep on repeating it. They could in the nightclub, you know, they could do their act, or in vaudeville. But once you go into TV, we have to have all new stuff every week. It was scary for them. I had the worst trouble I think I had was getting Jimmy Durante, who was a big, big, compelling star, to go into All Star Review, which was the same as Comedy Hour, except the stars there were Danny Thomas. I'd put him in his first radio show as a star, and Ed Wynn, who had lost the strength that he'd had in radio as the fire chief, and Jack Carson, who was an upcoming and very funny guy.
My guest is Pat Weaver, one of the early presidents of NBC TV. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Pat Weaver. He's written a memoir about the early days of radio and TV called The Best Seat in the House. One of the things that you created on television was the still-on-the-air Today Show. What was morning television like before the Today Show?
Well, it was almost none of the stations went on the air. A few here and there would have cartoons for kids. That was all. But when I went to NBC, I already mapped out in my head an 18-hour service, which I knew we would have to have in time. I put off the morning show. And in fact, when I first thought of it, it was going to be just sort of a rise and shine show like we'd done in radio with great success. We knew from our research that 75% of the people turned the radio on in the morning and listened to see if the world was still there. You know, we were having a lot of trouble in the 50s, Korea and the Soviet Union. People were concerned. They were worried, and they turned on the radio for that as well as for other information mm-hmm. about weather and things.
So that's what you wanted to create on television?
Well, on Today, I was going to do an easygoing breakfast club type thing. And there were many successful ones. But because I had to wait, I also got to think more and more about how bad our evening news was and how good it could be on the Today Show because with the heavy equipment, bulky, you know, a real problem to get to wherever something important was happening, the big story in the States. We couldn't get overseas, really. But we had to take the film and then develop the film and get the film to New York. You know, again, we still didn't have the coaxial cable going from coast to coast. That was 52, but by the time that happened, maybe it was the end of 52.
You say in your book that you had a low opinion of television news when you created the Today Show, but you wanted the Today Show to improve on that. What did you want the show to do?
Well, as I say, we had all night to, one, get to a place where something big was happening. Two, this is with our equipment, and two, we'd have time to get the film and develop the film and fly it back to New York and put it on the show. So we had real coverage that they did not have before then. Before then, really, John Cameron Swayze would read the AP bulletins practically. I mean, that's just what I did in San Francisco when I did the CBS News. I read the AP. I didn't even bother with a writer or write it myself. I just ad-libbed off the AP circus.
The Today Show has a long, proud history. The thing everybody seems to be vaguely embarrassed and uncomfortable about, though, is Fred J. Muggs, the chimp. Did you like the idea of him early on?
Oh, absolutely, the minute I saw him. I was all for all kinds of animals, to keep the kids from turning on cartoons if they were available.
Oh, sure, and there was only one set in the house back in those days.
Yeah, that's right, and it was in the family room. But when they brought Muggs in, it was a baby chimp then, I said, boy, put him on tomorrow. And he was really a great lift. The fact that we had the window for everybody to see the show when television was so new still, and with the set still not anything like it would become within a year. And Muggs, of course, was a tremendous extra addition for people to go and see. All of the kids wanted to go down to 49th Street and look through the window and see the chimp,
uh-huh.
as well as looking at real television and then, of course, holding up signs.
I guess Dave Garraway wasn't a real big draw to the kids.
Well, he was always very popular, though.
Uh-huh. So you had the Today Show and the Tonight Show, which, of course, is still running two
yeah.
incredible successes.
That was, I put off the Tonight Show, which I had more formalized, actually, even than the Today Show. But I put it off because we had a runaway hit. The first show I did was Broadway Open House, Late at Night with Jerry Lester and guy that worked for me in California in the olden days, Maury Amsterdam. And Jerry worked three nights and Maury worked two nights, and it was called Broadway Open House, and it just went right through the roof. The ratings weren't very accurate in those days, but we could tell from the mail and from the ratings that it was unbelievable. And that was, what, 11:30, something like that at night.
Mm-hmm. So what was your first vision for The Tonight Show? What did you want the show to be?
I wanted it to be a show that was coverage primarily of entertainment. Any opening we'd cover of the theater, or in those days the clubs were still important. It would be also, it had to be a funny show. And that's when having worked so long with Fred Allen, the god of my broadcast world, I wanted a funny show. And Steve Allen was doing a local show in which he had some pretty funny stuff. And he had a producer who was a good friend of mine, Bill Harbach. And so I talked to Steve about a structure that would have coverage. And for instance, the opening of the show then was Times Square, which was in those days still the center of the theater world, you know, and the nightclub world. And our camera would open on Times Square, and we show the whole of Times Square from the Times building there at the corner. And then the camera would zoom down to a second camera, which would zoom in on the Hudson Theater, which we bought to do the show, really. And Steve would work the audience with a lot of audience gimmicks. And then he had, all those wonderful comics who really blossomed on the Tonight Show.
Pat Weaver left NBC in 1956, largely over in-house politics. Since leaving the network, he's run his own program production company and ran an early pay TV operation. His new memoir about the early days of radio and TV is called The Best Seat in the House. This is Fresh Air.